Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Setting the Tone, an ER retrospective, the show where we do a chronological breakdown of every episode of our favorite TV medical drama. My name is Elizabeth, and with me today, finally returning, is Lauren. Hello. Welcome back, Lauren.
Hello.
Coming back from medical leave.
Who knows? We'll see if I make it through this whole one. Don't get hopes up.
But still, you're here now, and that's what counts. So, and also, I guess Daniel's here too. Yeah, but in a new brand new studio.
Damn straight. And it's probably sound is probably still fucked up as I'm trying to like figure out how this new space works and put all my stuff in. So, yeah. Bear with me.
Soundproofing. Today we'll be discussing season 10, episode 20, which is titled Abby Normal. The episode aired on April 29th, 2004. Lauren, what was going on that week 20 years ago?
Boy, I come back to such a happy one, you guys.
There's one big one this week.
After months of reports by anti-torture organizations worldwide, photographic evidence of torture and prisoner abuse at Abu Ghraib prison in U.S.-occupied Iraq is released first by 60 Minutes, a CBS news program. A more detailed article, as well as the photos, were later published by the New Yorker magazine, bringing the abuse into the wide public eye. 12 of the soldiers photographed were prosecuted with jail sentences ranging from 6 months to 3 years.
And no one up high was really held responsible.
Of course not.
For any of this.
And then Man on Fire, starring Denzel Washington, Dakota Fanning, and Christopher Walken, debuts and takes the number one spot at the box office. And Yeah by Usher featuring Ludacris and Little John is still the number one song. Daniel, what else was on?
At 8 p.m., Friends with the episode The One with Rachel's Going Away Party. At 8:30, Friends rerun. And at 9, Will and Grace with a two-part episode. Part one, I Do, and part two, Oh No You Didn't. I can't possibly begin to tell you how little I've
actually never seen the word didn't.
That's a
put into like text.
That's a direct transcription from the listing. So that's exactly how it was written. That's
I got you.
I didn't take any artistic license there. This week's episode had 22 million viewers tuning in, directed by Jonathan Kaplan, doing his 34th out of 40 as a director. Previous ones of his from this season include Impulse Control, Missing, Out of Africa, and Now What? And written by David Zabel, doing his 12th out of 44. And his previous ones from this season include The Student, Missing, and Out of Africa. And no Susan joining us this week, still on maternity leave.
Well, our previous news brought this week is brought to you, you know, with her name in the title, it's obviously going to be brought to us by Abby. And Carrie's meeting with the lawyer man, and because she really wants to keep Henry another day, but the lawyer strongly advises against that. And if you listen in the episode, there's a really low hum in the background. That's actually the sound of Jake Terrell Esquire shrieking at Carrie.
Just a little bit of light custody agreement violation to start your episode.
Yeah, it's fine. But then we go. Carter is presumably at O'Hare to pick up Kem. Neela is in the lab outsmarting the boys, so we love Neela here in her lab life. We pivot up to Abby in psych, and she is leading another group. And, oh, hey, it's the streaker that got beaten up by a bunch of girls a couple episodes ago. And apparently, one of the members killed himself, but everyone reassures Abby that she's doing a great job anyway.
It's one of those scenes where it's like you want to like kind of laugh at it. But in a kind of a nervous way. At least that's how reacted.
Very much reminded me of, and you guys laugh because I bring this movie up and nobody likes it but me, but it very much reminds me of some of the scenes in Patch Adams where they're like, oh no, it's fine. This is weird, but it's fine. But yeah, and then we see Carrie is making last minute travel arrangements for her and Henry, more Jake shrieking, and Lizzie is dropping off some of Ella's old clothes for Henry. And she calls Carrie's bluff that they're just going to Seattle. She's like, no. Nah.
Since when do you need your passport to go to Seattle?
Yep. Mm-hmm. And then we pop back into the ER, and Abby and Morris are with a guy who admits to killing his guinea pig for practice for the Battle Royale. That was this gentleman, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I think so.
Yeah. And I can't remember. Have we already noted it, or did we note it that whether this is another Bangs, right?
It was Bangs.
For statistics.
Oh, I didn't even put the in with Bangs.
Elizabeth.
I'm sorry.
For statistics keeping purposes.
Yes.
Bangs. I literally had to do it all this week. So it was a little.
We love you and you're doing great, sweetie. But
a little frazzled this week.
It was Bangs, Daniel.
bangs. All right, I will just make sure to make a note for myself for season wrap-up in 2 weeks. 3 weeks, actually. Sorry, 3 weeks. This is only episode 20.
We go into our first trauma, and oh, hey, it's not Seizure Mom. She's back. Abby lets Chen know and Morris know that she actually should be up in the psych unit, that last time she was in here, there was no actual seizure activity detected. Welcome back, Lauren. Abby tries to convince her husband, Mr. Dunn. The woman's name is Jordan. I forget if we got that last episode, but they definitely refer to her as Jordan a lot this episode. Yeah. So, but yeah, Abby tries to convince Mr. Dunn that Jordan is actually having pseudo seizures, but the guy's like, "The fuck are you talking about?" And it's like, "How the do you think that? Look at that. You think that's faking?" And it's a whole thing. Lizzie is talking to Abby about Carrie, and she is very worried that Carrie is going to bolt off with Henry and violate the custody order.
Which, like, I mean, and I know we still have some more stuff to come in the later episodes, but, like, am I the only one that was a little disappointed that we would have been like, oh, this is too soap opera-y, like, this is too over the top. But I feel like there was part of me that was like, I kind of want to see the, like, Carrie on the run episode. Like, I kind of want to see Carrie just, like, kidnap her own kid and, you know.
Give us a fathers and sons, but just Carrie and Henry.
See, I would have been all about that, but in my, like, 3-day rewatch of Downton Abbey, they have a similar story about, like, one of the girls running away with her child. So I was just like, no, I'm good.
Ah.
It's like, or, I saw it on Call the Midwife and Downton Abbey. I don't need to see Carrie do it.
Yeah, or at the very least, I think I would have liked to have seen Lizzie have a little bit more involvement in this, because they kind of make it seem like Lizzie's going to be the voice of reason here and is going to, like, you know, talk Carrie down off the ledge. And then they kind of pivot and just give it to Abby for no reason. Like, they kind of just go, like, actually, we'd rather have Abby do this instead of Lizzie. Like, it's kind of, I mean, it's...
Yeah, apparently it all falls on Abby for some fucking reason.
Right, it's emblematic of where we're at with Lizzie is what it is. Just a bummer. But we then go over and see Luca and Sam in the lounge. Sam's still trying to figure all the ongoing shit out with Steve, and Luca's clearly kind of uncomfortable with the whole situation. But Sam's trying to assuage his concerns and insist that she still wants to be with him and not Steve.
Like, no, he's sleeping on the couch.
Yeah. Am I totally stable, totally cool, totally not going to kill anybody? Ex-husband or
break out of prison or
right. Become a different person entirely.
Yeah. Literally become Garrett Hedlund.
Oh boy. And then we see Carter and Kim finally moving into that fancy house that he impulse bought for them a few episodes ago. And oh boy, I made the mistake. We're a little behind because of my move. We're a little behind with recording this week, so I had to put up the, like, response thread for next week, and I saw what next week's episode is, and I'm...
The episode?
Yeah, I am, like...
So,
oh, dear.
I'm hurt.
I am calling out sick right now.
I am...
Lauren, if I gotta be here, you gotta be here.
I am... continue. I mean, it's, you know, I've obviously seen the episode before. We even did a flash forward of that episode.
Wasn't that the one we did with Jake?
That was the one Jake picked out of a hat and kind of killed the concept. It just is shocking to me how little there is that is truly not enjoyable, but the writers have done them no favors with this relationship, and then we're gonna just, like, devastate them next week for funsies. It seems like it's
for the lols.
Yeah, like, it's just kind of a bummer watching it now and realizing that there's so very little of substance to lead up to that, and then, you know, it's just they never had a chance, you know, and, like, it's it continues to bug me how much shit that character gets when really, like, it's kind of like Jen Green syndrome. Like, you were never given a chance to wrap your arms around that character and love her before something horrific happens to her that it, of course, would change anybody's mindset. It's just not fair. But so it made it a little hard to absorb and enjoy where they're at in this episode, knowing what's coming just next week. But in any event, Carrie shows up to the ER with Henry intently, rightly intending to hand him over to the Lopezes, but still kind of has that you know, the undercurrent vibe of wanting to bolt.
Cagey. Which,
yeah, a little cagey, you know, still thinking about it. We see Abby and the psych supervisor from last episode talking with Jordan, the pseudo-seizure lady. And they convince her to go up to the psych ward because that's where she can get the best care right now. And both her and her husband are skeptical, but they're both kind of willing to try if it means that they might make some progress.
Yeah. And we have a homophobic shithead show up, a.k.a. Sandy's mom and her lawyer. They show up to collect Henry. Abby goes to apparently it falls, like I said before, it falls to Abby to find Carrie, because yep. Apparently she's not, like, immediately in the lounge and something, right. And, like, Abby's like, wait here, I'll go find her. And then, of course, like, 2 seconds after Abby gets to the lounge, they're like, where's Henry? Blah, blah, blah. The lawyer's like, if you're helping her hide, we will sue you for, and arrest you for conspiracy or whatever. Some lawyer bullshit that Jake probably understands more.
He goes full Christian Bale Batman. Like, where's the trigger?
Where's the trigger, man?
Where's the child?
You wouldn't give Henry to an ordinary citizen.
Look, turns out, after talking all that hot shit, Carrie was just outside in the ambulance bay with Carrie. I mean, Carrie was just outside in the ambulance bay with Henry.
I was staring at that and I was like, is she going to do it? Is she going to do
look,
it?
Look, fuck you.
Yeah.
Fuck me. Fuck past me for doing that.
It's not so easy, is it, Chief?
I'm Ron Burgundy? but handoff is successful, if not devastatingly emotional to Carrie.
The line from her with he likes to be held up to the sky, like, ugh, brutal.
He likes subsies.
Brutal.
R.I.P. Brooklyn.
I'm sorry, Lauren. Yeah, I'm sorry, Lauren.
That's okay. For reference, upsies was what we would do with our favorite little family dog. But then we see it's Wednesday, and there is no indication of what the prior day was, but Kem and Carter are doing baby prep stuff. The ER got them another crib. Okay, cool, I guess. And Kem is having doubts about their readiness, but Carter is confident. Again, like Daniel said, these two never have a chance to just be happy.
Yeah.
So, from there,
fleeting moments when they get two cribs.
Yep.
Ha ha. Oh, are you having twins?
But then we go back up to psych with Abby and Jordan, Mrs. Dunn, and a special psychiatrist is brought in to try and get to the bottom of what's causing her pseudo seizures. Jordan gets angry at the line of questioning because she's like, no, of course it's not my baby. I love my baby. Like, I want to be able to take care of my kid. What are you suggesting? And the specialist wants to treat her as an outpatient, but report them to CPS for further monitoring. Yeah, this is fine.
And this
totally fine.
This specialist is the social worker replacement for Adele.
That
we have very briefly, Daniel Day Kim.
You're right.
And this episode is his last appearance, so don't get used to him. He will be on that island by the end of the episode.
He'll be on. I think isn't he the fucking Dr. Han meme from like last year sometime or something? I don't know.
Maybe. I have no idea what you're talking about.
Like, there's a show on Fox where, like, there's an autistic surgeon.
Oh.
And he gets fired by Dr. Han or something. Oh. And it was, like, live Dr. Han reaction. And it's just him just being stoic.
I know what show you're talking about, but I have not seen the meme.
The Good Doctor?
I think it's something like that, yeah.
Yeah.
Because New Amsterdam is the one with,
yes, I think it is.
Logan from Gilmore Girls.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think Good Doctor is the one with the autistic doctor.
And looking at the meme now, I'm pretty sure that is Daniel Day Kim. Yes. So.
Okay.
That's amazing.
Anyway, we're going to go to our first audio clip here. But before that, Kem meets Carter's dad and he just kind of blows her off. Didn't think that was worth getting as part of the audio.
Dick.
Exactly. But then we're going to get into a Carter Foundation board meeting. Let's have some fun.
Hello, everyone. This is Bakemba Lakasu. She's going to be sitting in. I apologize, I don't know all of your names. And introductions would take all day, so... First item on the agenda. Northwestern has agreed to take over the management of the house and the property for use as an institute of advanced health studies.
You're selling Mother's house?
Donating it. It will serve as a conference center for various public health issues and housing for visiting scholars and experts on foundation fellowships.
I don't understand.
Which part?
This foundation was expressly created by your grandfather to support arts and cultural institutions.
And that's what we've been doing for almost 50 years.
Well, time for a change then.
You're going to unilaterally overturn the legacy that your grandparents left behind?
Not overturning anything. I'm simply redirecting some resources into other worthy causes.
What gives you the right?
My grandmother's will gives me the right. But if you don't believe in what I'm doing here, maybe it's time you stepped aside.
Next. Millicent dies, you run off halfway around the world, disappear for months, only to come back like some sort of avenging angel with a pregnant African girl in tow.
Her name is Kim.
You back using drugs?
Hey, I made lunch.
Thank you, but I have to be going.
Oh, Dad, stay a while. Come on.
Thanks, I can't.
She left the money to me. She left the house to me. She trusted me to make the right decisions for the future.
I doubt she'd agree that's what you're doing now. Pleasure meeting you. I look forward to getting the wedding announcement.
You glad I came? Really smoothed out those rough edges.
Oof, all of it.
Dibs on the album name, The Avenging Angel with the Pregnant African Girl.
That is a good band name.
Are you on drugs again?
Oh God, he met great. The only again with the foreknowledge of what is to come next episode, and knowing that we're gonna get a good we're gonna get an honest to goodness good moment out of Carter's dad. This would be like a real shitty place to leave that character.
Yeah.
Holy shit. He may,
but also, goddamn, I love a good, like, no, fuck you, this is what we're doing in a business setting.
Right, yeah. I do like, it was very reminiscent of one of my favorite lines from Independence Day, when he's like, what are you, like, I don't understand what you're doing, or I don't understand why you're doing this, and he goes, which part? And it's very reminiscent of that line from Jeff Goldblum, mm-hmm. when he's talking to the guys on the plane on Air Force One, like in the first act. Which part? Like, that's just, it's one of my favorite Jeff Goldblum line reads in that movie.
I just love that movie.
Right. But yeah, this is, I'm realizing as we're getting deeper and deeper into things, and like, we're going to start closing the book on a lot of these Carter plot threads, that there is not as much to some of this stuff as I remember, because I feel like I remember there being so much more Carter Foundation horseshit. Like, I feel like I remember there being so much more to this, and they kind of all just like do the Wayne Corporation thing from Dark Knight Rises. They kind of just like go, burr, 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 you can't do this. And then that's,
well, yes, I can.
That's the last we're really going to see of these people. So it's just interesting, you know, it's interesting again, doing this episode by episode, we're really seeing like how your brain plays tricks with you and your memories play tricks with you on the significance of certain things.
In other news, how fucking cool would it be to be a surgical fellow and get to come stay at like the Carter Palace?
Right. Yeah. It's
like, oh, we're just going to let people crash there. Jealous.
Right. Hint of things to come when it comes to, you know, Carter and how he's planning on using the family money going forward. So, and we do get one kind of, oh, hey, it's that guy in this scene that we've actually seen him before. He's an unnamed board member in this scene. So I guess in theory, he could potentially be the same character that we've seen in the past. But he is played by actor Bruce Gray. He's the one who does the majority of the speaking, the older guy who does the majority of the speaking for the board in that scene. And he has appeared in stuff like My Big Fat Greek Wedding, Starship Troopers, and the TV series Medium. And as I had mentioned before, he did appear back all the way back in season one as a different character. He is one of the doctors on Green's M&M panel After,
oh, remember when they did M&M's?
Right. He was part of Green's M&M panel after Love's Labor Lost. So, and that character did have a name. I forget exactly. It's Dr. Something, you know, but this guy doesn't have a, this character doesn't have a name. He's just credited as board member. So I guess in theory it could possibly, because doctors serve on boards a lot. So it could be the same doctor. Bruce, the actor, he does have 179 credits to his name, which makes him the high watermark actor for this episode. And unfortunately, he did pass away in 2017, so he's no longer with us.
He's a board member in the sky now.
He's ascended to a higher board. We then go from there back to the ER, or back to the psych ward, where Streaker Guy is complaining to Abby about the vending machines, about it stealing his money. Jordan's neighbor brings the kids in, or brings her kid in for a visit, and Jordan almost immediately starts having one of her pseudo seizures again. You love to see it. Great,
yep,
this,
just what I needed.
Right, great. Lauren really knows how to pick.
So, I'll tell you guys, I didn't watch the last two episodes. I've been in my own little world. But Daniel was like, "Man, so good you missed last week's. That would have been a fine one for you to miss." And then I turned this one on today, and I was like, "Are you fucking kidding me,
well,
guys?"
Yeah, but at least they get to the bottom of it this time around. So
still,
and they don't immediately go to like, "Oh, she must be faking it," which is kind of what they do last episode, which I feel like is somehow worse, you know. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, it's like I told you earlier today. Like, it was like you had a hell of a Sophie's Choice on your hands. Like, it's either you could come back this week and deal with this bullshit, or you can come back next week and deal with that.
All I'm going to do is come back every time I feel remotely up to it, and we'll see where I get.
We'll see where we get. But yeah, so Abby and the psych supervisor, whose name I cannot be bothered to remember.
Just keep putting him in a supervisor.
They somewhat correctly ID the baby as the common denominator stressor after a brief detour into like, ooh, maybe it's the husband who's the problem. Because, again, not really remembering exactly where this story was going to go. I thought maybe we were going to do the old, like, oh, the husband was abusive, and this is her, like, trauma response. But it doesn't really go that way, you know. So it's points to them for finding a new angle on it. But they identify the baby as the stressor that's inducing the pseudo-seizures. So more to come on that as we go along. But for now, we go over to our next patient down in the ER, a young man named Elgin Gibbs, who is a 17-year-old with both of his hands burnt at the same time very severely, burnt them on a grill at work. He apparently knows Pratt. Neela's the one treating him, and Pratt comes up to check on him and sees Elgin, and there's clearly some recognition there. So we're not quite sure what the nature of that relationship is just yet. But we find out that Elgin also has high blood pressure, and Pratt suspects drugs, which...
And it's a young black man who's working, who's burning the midnight oil.
I guess, yeah. Maybe that has something to do with it. I don't know. But yeah, Pratt's first suspicion is drugs. So he wants Neela to do a tox screen. Neela's like, "I gotta go. I can't be here. I gotta go back up to the lab because I'm doing a time-sensitive experiment." She kind of gets... kind of get some shit.
It's like mouse brain slices or
something like that. Yeah, she's got to be up there for the next hour or so. That becomes important in a bit. But Pratt's just kind of giving her shit for it. He's like, "If you want to be a doctor, if you want to be an ER doctor, then you need to be down here." Which, you know, we're leading ourselves down that road towards kicking Neela up to surgery eventually. But and Elgin here is played by actor James Earl, not Jones, just the first two. James Earl, who appears in stuff like Gridiron Gang, Fired Up, and The Lazarus Effect, and he is making his first of four appearances as Elgin.
And is that this season finale where this shit goes down with him? Him and Pratt and Chen,
yes,
in the car?
Yeah.
That,
yeah,
okay.
That's
what I thought, but I was like, for some reason I had that pegged as like season 11 or 12.
Because it bleeds over into the season 11 premiere.
Yeah, I know. I remember that,
yeah,
but...
So.
Oh, Elgin. All right, and we go up to the lab now. Neela finds Yuri, the Asian lab guy.
The Power Ranger.
Super high on ketamine. What?
The Power Ranger.
Yeah, the Power Ranger. Super high on ketamine. And because Colin and him are doing an off-the-book study on its neurological effects. And Neela is like, bitch the fuck, and is obviously concerned. But Colin reassures Neela, one of us always stays sober in case anything happens. It's fine. It's fine. This is all fine.
Which, it's really kind of funny to watch this episode and watch this particular scene in 2024, you know, when they really have made such incredible strides when it comes to ketamine use in controlled environments with regards to...
Get on it, Illinois.
With regards to depression and, you know, other neurological stuff. Like, this scene is played for a little bit of shock value and a little bit of laughs here, but like, I'm not sure when that research starts, but I'm sure it must have started, you know, that the nature of medical research, it takes a while. So if it's just now getting into the mainstream in 2024, you have to imagine that not too long after this episode, they probably were like, actually, that's not a bad idea. Let's start, you know, thinking about that. Let's start looking at that. Kind of oddly prescient this episode.
Ooh, good use of the word prescient.
Thanks. I'm glad you were here to appreciate that.
Yeah. If nothing else, I appreciated that. But yeah, then we go over to Abby is back with Jordan, and she's trying to get to the root cause of the not seizures beyond just the baby being a stressor. And Jordan's kind of like, well, what about you? I'm sure you have everything fine. And Abby's like, boy, don't I. So they have a little slightly unprofessional moment of Abby kind of putting some of her shit out there as a way to build trust. Now, she doesn't go too far, so I'm okay with this, but like, there is such a thing as boundaries in therapy, so this could have almost gotten not great. But Jordan ends up connecting with her, trusts her a little bit more, and it works, and we learn that Jordan had a baby before the current one, I think Charlie, and he died at only 2 months old. They said it was due to SIDS, but we'll learn more about that in a little bit.
Oh boy, won't we. But let's go back to the stone people, or stone person, as it were. Yuri is still super stoned and complimenting Neela, and oh no, he's having a run of tachycardia. And it turns out, oh, he has a heart condition, so he probably shouldn't be utilizing ketamine when he's not, when he's has, yeah, a weak heart to begin with. It turns out I have a heart condition, and they go down to the ER where Pratt is pissed at Neela for being gone so long, and then he was like, You're only gonna be gone 20 minutes. It's been over an hour. Blah 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 blah, and barking out orders. And there, it's like, Neela, they get Yuri back into a normal rhythm with drugs. They almost have to shock him, but he is okay. And Pratt says he won't rat them out.
Oh yeah, because they,
good boy Pratt,
right? Because they're like, oh, we're gonna get kicked out if we get caught or whatever.
Yeah. Let them expand their minds in peace.
This is the one and only time I think we ever are told that there's a research lab in the hospital. And like, it's a
big hospital,
right? It's just, I always like when we get those liminal space departments, you know, where it's like this department is it's useful for this one thing.
Dr. Mr. Cary Weaver in his creepy ass pizza lab.
His creepy ass villain lair.
Genie in the HIV clinic.
Genie in the HIV clinic, yes, also.
Remember when there was a peds clinic, guys? Remember Carol's clinic?
Remember the jail ward that Lizzie...
I think that still comes up a couple times.
It might
more.
Come up, yeah, but just these little places that come up very, very infrequently.
Just hey, can you build this set for a weekend?
Right. Yeah, poor Charlie Lagola, like, just down there, just ripping his hair out, wondering what John Wells and Chris Chulak are going to throw at him this week.
Just has his head in his hands. I'm tired, man.
Build us a damn hyperbaric chamber.
Smoking a cigarette in the corner, just like, oh, God, not again. Yeah, so. But then we go over to, back to Pratt, who's in, checking in with Elgin. Turns out his tox screen is negative, and, like, Elgin is surprisingly chill about Pratt kind of halfway accusing him of being on drugs. Like, he's like, oh, your tox...
He's like, I told you.
Yeah, he's like, your tox screen came back negative. And he's just like, yeah, man, I told you it would. Like, I would have been like, fuck you for even asking, man. Like, it was... I don't know. I just thought he was like... Especially considering everything he is currently going through at the moment, like, having both of your hands burned to the point where you can't use them, he's probably not in a great mood to begin with. So you would just think that having an accusation like that hurled at him would probably not be handled, wouldn't take it the best way.
You would demand to speak to Life's manager.
But Lemons. Yeah, we get a little bit more background on Elgin here. We find out he's the oldest of five and has to work to help support the family. His mom works, I believe she works during the day.
He said graveyard shift.
Oh, yeah. She works graveyard shift, and he stays home with the younger siblings, and then the reverse during the day. She's at home, and he's at work. So, and he doesn't know his dad, and there was another guy in the picture at some point, but he took off to one of the other kids' dads. So it's kind of just him and his mom basically trying to keep the family afloat. And then randomly Pratt decides to take out the fact that Gallant left on Neela. Which was a bizarre...
Yeah, like what the fuck?
It was a bizarre little detour to take in this episode where it's like... It was sort of like Neela being like, what do you say fuck me for? Like, it's very like, oh, by the way, fuck you too while we're here. And it's like, okay, I know we kind of came to this place of like begrudging respect between Gallant and Pratt by the end, but let's not pretend that they were some magical bromance. Like, they were two dudes who both happened to be black that the show liked to... periodically throw together in a scene just because, you know, the black guys must know each other when you have a show full of white writers.
Well, that, and also it was the one way they could actually, you know, contrast black experiences, which props to them for not just saying all black people have the exact same background.
Yeah, but it felt a little disingenuous that that he would have this level of kind of like,
oh,
I'm so pissed at you, like, for whatever.
Absolutely.
Yeah, how dare Gallant follow a lawfully given deployment order?
How dare he essentially volunteer to leave the country?
What the fuck?
Yeah. So, he just...
Yell at the COs.
He just kind of goes off on a tangent here, and it's a little out of left field. But poor Neela, just getting it from all sides here. But then we get another day. This has really become a recurring theme where they decide to do these either time stamps or time skips, and they only like halfway commit to it, where they're like, oh yeah, it's indeterminate amount of time has passed, don't worry about it, it'll all come out in the wash. Like, it's so frustrating. Like, if you're gonna do that, stick to it. Like, make it a part of the episode, make it a thing that carries through, or make it matter, because these time skips happen in almost every episode and nobody gives a shit.
They don't matter,
right?
It's not part, like, it's not,
if it's not germane to the story, then who cares?
That's the word. Thank you.
I'm full of them. You've been down for 2 weeks. Like, I have had so many like English major like backed up in me. Like, I gotta get these out.
I wouldn't appreciate your sublime lexicon, Daniel.
Not in the way she can.
Mm-mm. That's fair.
Not in the way she can. We like I said, we get a time skip. It's now Monday. Okay. I just want a pissed off Garfield to just like poke his head into the corner of the screen. Like, why do I care that it's Monday? Abby is with Jordan again. They want to talk more about her first child, the one that died. As an infant, we find out Jordan never got counseling after it happened, and Abby wants to use an unconventional drug treatment to help Jordan be drowsy enough to open up, but awake enough to still communicate and see if we can get more of the underlying story out of this. We've entered the Doug Ross portion of the episode. The Doug Ross.
Come on, we've all seen spy movies. We know how this works. Just injector was something made by a mad scientist in a lab in a villain's lair, and then a
little bit
we'll be all
little
good.
Dose of sodium pentothal and we'll be good to go.
Thank you. I couldn't remember what the drug was called,
but yeah, it's this is again this felt very it's another feather in the cap of those people who think that had they had a chance to cross paths, Abby and Doug would have been best of friends, because this feels very much out of the Doug Ross playbook. And of course the psych resident is like, well, I'm not into it. We'll get there. But back in the lab, Yuri is getting yelled at by faceless, nameless supervisor who runs the lab about the whole thing. Colin is very distressed and tries to defend what they're doing to Neela. And Neela is like, bro, I didn't snitch. Like, it wasn't me.
Yeah.
You know.
I was just glad I was here when your boy went
right
down.
Like, she's rightfully so defends herself and is like, look, man, I got nothing to do with this, but I do feel more comfortable in the lab versus the ER, which is, again, a very kind of a little bit of an abandonment of what she said like two or three episodes ago when she was like, I didn't get into medicine to work research. Like, I want to be a doctor. Actually, just kidding. I kind of like being in the lab. Like, it's we're very wishy-washy on the characterization for Neela at the moment.
All right. And, ooh, ready for some fun, people? Abby's trying to get her supervisor to agree to the medicine induction truth serum stuff for Jordan. I mean, it's basically what she's trying to do,
yeah.
Right?
Essentially, yeah.
He's not going for it, but apparently Abby already got consent from another attending right. doctor.
A supposedly very old and very, like, morally flexible psych resident.
Like 80 yeah, year old or something.
Because he's like,
I loved how he was like, oh, and what if it worked great while he was in Korea or whatever.
Yeah, he was like, if you wanted him to sign off on a lobotomy, he probably would.
Yeah.
And like, part of me was like, I want to meet this doctor. Like, why right? don't we get to meet this doctor?
Alan Alda's back in psych right. in psych
and,
form.
Right, and you just know that he would be played by some really fun character actor. Like, it would just be,
Just give me Tommy Lee Jones and a guest star as a cranky old doctor.
Going back to Independence Day, I want Jeff Goldblum's dad from that movie as this doctor.
Yes.
Yes.
I want Judd Hirsch.
Judd
Hirsch.
Yeah, Judd Hirsch.
I want Judd Hirsch.
Judd Hirsch is the best.
He's another one just with 10 out of 10 line reads in that movie. With the way he says vultures.
Vultures.
Well, I'll say this: vultures. even in the sequel, which was an incredibly, it's a movie that happened. Even in the sequel, he's a delight.
I think I watched half that movie on a plane and fell asleep.
That's fine. You didn't miss anything, but I'm just saying, like, he is one of the two things that makes the sequel even remotely worth looking at.
He is
once. One
of the actors of all time. Judd,
yes,
Judd
but
Hirsch.
I adore him in Independence Day. He's so good.
But come on, Daniel, you have to appreciate that Brent Spiner's character is gay.
Hey, you know what? I'll take it because Brent Spiner's adorable.
Didn't he die in the first one?
No. So they have him like it's insinuated he's dead because of course you'd think that with him having been strangled. But in the sequel, it's revealed that he had been in like a medical coma from the strangulation for a while.
Sure.
And then woke back up when the aliens were coming back and the guy who had been his lab partner had been, like, knitting him a scarf and had been in love. It was a whole thing. But he's, like, canonically gay in the sequel.
Homo erectus hand wavius is the, the medical term for his coma.
I'll take it. But yes, 100%. But yeah, he runs around wearing this really cute hand-knitted scarf for the entire movie and it's precious. Anyway,
we immediately cut to them doing the drug therapy, wasting no time whatsoever. Abby guides Jordan through just some questioning, just like kind of easing her into like, okay, like we know you had a kid before, like what's going on here, blah, blah, blah. And then eventually, yeah, we find out that Jordan blames herself for Charlie. It was this kid, right? Charlie who died of SIDS, kid's death. And turns out the guy she had Charlie with was horrible to her.
Was a piece of trash.
Extremely abusive. Like, where's Doug Ross to do the White Knight thing when you need him? Like,
it's not funny because it's not, but that the way I remembered that the kid's name was Charlie was the whole time I was thinking, I was like, God, she killed Kirsten Dunst? Like, that's...
Jesus Christ.
That's the only way that I could remember the kid's name the whole time was I just kept thinking of Kirsten Dunst's character.
And, we actually find out that Jordan, I left because I don't know how to respond to this, but, information, but, oh shit, Jordan accidentally killed the kid while she was hiding from her ex and trying to protect the little one. She held him so close to her chest and was just so...
Was trying to lovingly keep him quiet and safe.
Yeah.
Yeah, and accidentally suffocated him. And she's afraid she's gonna do it again.
As you would
understandable.
Be. Yeah, as you would be.
Yeah, so, happy episode, everyone.
Yeah. But shout out to this actress for how well she delivers all this. Like, she does such a good job of, like, peeling that onion.
Right, yeah. And I think, you know, spoilers for the end of the episode. Like, I kind of think I want the Abby psych rotation thing to be more of a thing and like more of a focus. And I'll get into the particulars of that towards the end. But like, you do kind of need the two-part aspect of this, of like the lighter aspects of Abby's psych rotation to kind of counteract the darkness of this particular thread, because like, holy shit, like this goes from like a not fun, but like a house-ish sort of mystery patient thing to just like hella dark in the space of one or two scenes. And it's kind of a bummer. But we go over, speaking of bummers, Carrie is at home, clearly not doing great, when Lizzie calls and leaves a voicemail saying that she's here for Carrie. Not here in the physical sense, you know, because that would be an overutilization of her. We can't have her physically show up and do anything, because that would be unbecoming. We'll just have her talk through a box and tell Carrie that she's here for her. And I mean, she alludes, she says as much in the message. It's like, I know what it's like to lose someone you love. There's a ready-made dynamic here. That's already kind of a little bit established, and we could dig into some history there. We could have this like nice, beautiful friendship, you know, companionship thing where Lizzie finally, makes good on saying that, you know, oh, I was wrong to, Mark and I were wrong to exclude you from our wedding and stuff like that. You know, like there's all sorts of stuff that you could pull from.
Just have bygones be bygones, right, and help out Carrie through a very traumatic situation.
There's all sorts of stuff I feel like you could pull from there, and they just don't. And I'm not a fan. But we go back and check in with Abby one more time. The social worker, he wants to take the CPS route with Jordan. Now that we have the revelation that she has killed a child in the past, accidentally or no, he is like, we have to, you know, blah, 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 whatever. Which, you know, from his standpoint, I mean, he's a mandated reporter and all that stuff. And like, I get it. I get both sides of that. So he's like, you know, I'm going to have to call CPS and they're going to have to do an evaluation and they'll take it from there. And then he hops into an elevator, and presumably when those elevator doors open on the other end, he will be on a deserted island off the coast of Hawaii, because this is the last time we will be seeing Ken, the social worker. He is off to islands anew.
Into the Abramsverse.
Into the Abramsverse for an even more pointless show. Abby checks in with the supervisor, who encourages her on the whole thing. This is one of the tropiest scenes in the whole fucking episode, is where he's like, this is the cop drama scene where it's like, you're a wildcat kid, but damn it, your gut was right on. Like, it's so fucking, I was going to have your badge and gun. Like, it's that kind of like attaboy kind of thing. She got away with it again. And he's like, you're really good at this. And you know, he offers to tutor her for the boards. But she's like, oh, it's actually too late for that. Smash cut over to Abby taking the boards again. And we get a closing shot of her and several others in a very 2004 computer lab.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Doing the exam with some very hopeful music as we close out the episode.
Abby's doing doctor things. Right? Yay!
We're finally going to finish that Carol storyline like 8 years later.
This episode was a fucking bummer, but it was good. Yay! 7.5 out of 10.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fair.
It's good.
Like, there's a lot of good things that, so it was nice to have like just a little mini arc of some Abby, for to have Abby some, bleh. It was nice to give something to Abby to latch on to at least make something out of this whatever psych rotation. So, and it was a good patient with a good actress to play, mm-hmm, off of.
Yeah.
And I guess I'm not sure if I would want more of it knowing the end of it, but like,
no,
it, like, I think I'm glad what we have. I think it's good.
I think we get just enough.
Yeah.
Yeah. It doesn't overstay its welcome.
It's been a nice little undercurrent this season Like, I don't know, I don't know that you would go so far as to call it a storyline, because they're kind of all self-contained little things, but like there's a nice little background undercurrent thing this season of Abby's different rotations. And I think I almost would have preferred that they expanded on that, and but it wouldn't have done anything for the, like, there's too much focus on Abby crowd, you know, right, that complains that the later seasons are too focused on Abby. But I mean, what the fuck else do they have going on right now? Like, you know what I mean? Like, I kind of feel like I would be okay with, right, taking time to actually flesh out each one of these rotations as like a little character study for Abby. And you know, she doesn't necessarily have to excel at every one of them, but just to, you know, give us a different flavor of like kind of other specialties within the hospital through the eyes of this med student.
Have her fucking suck at dermatology.
with a dermatologist played by Howie Mandel. Like, yes. Just give me a little bit of that. And also, too, like I said, I feel like there is another, maybe overly dramatic, but no less compelling, I think, episode to be had with the idea of Carrie running off with Henry. Like, I think you could have had two really good separate threads that almost warrant their own episodes here. Like, you could,
but I'm glad they didn't.
Yeah, I mean, considering, you know, how silly, especially as we get towards the end of seasons, things start to get as we get deeper and deeper into the timeline. Like, that would have definitely been an early harbinger of like, oh god, like we're getting really over the top now with this end of the season shenanigans. So yeah, I mean, maybe it's a little bit of restraint on the part of the writers to not do that, but I just feel like maybe it could have been something interesting to play with. And again, I'm continually frustrated that they pawn off the handoff on that storyline. They set it up with Lizzie, and then they literally have her go to Abby and be like, "Hey, why don't you take care of this for reasons that are unclear?" Even to Abby, like Abby even says in the scene, she's like, "Why me?" Like, it's such a pointless exercise in the writing to have Abby be the one that has to deal with the Carrie situation when Lizzie's already involved. So that does knock a couple points off for me.
Yeah.
But overall, still very solid. You know, we're heading down the home stretch here. We're headed into a stone cold fucking bummer next week. So if you thought this one was a bummer, you're going to be more of the same and then some next week. And I don't, other than the car stuff in the season finale, I don't really fully remember the rest of that episode. So that one will be interesting for me.
All right. Who wants to do listener responses?
I can do the first one, and then the rest is all Daniel.
All right. Lauren, what the listeners have to say about it?
Franner W. says, Casting aside the likelihood of someone of Abby's status ever being allowed to run and go with this unorthodox treatment, this episode is an excellent character vehicle. We see the cementing of who Dr. Abby Lockhart is, whilst still not knowing if she actually ever will be Dr. Abby Lockhart. An excellent doctor who has intuition unlike most others, is capable of advocating fiercely for her patient and for the course of treatment she believes in, self-awareness, enormous empathy, the list goes on. Who cares if there is poetic license taken with the reality of the actual medical storyline part? I love this episode.
I'm just happy to...
Daniel, the next one I'm looking at, and I'm like, I'm not going to read all that, but I'm happy for you.
I'm just happy to see Franner back in the...
Me too.
Back in the listener response segment where she belongs. We love you, Franner. It's been too long. At Simply Swooning says, I honestly didn't remember the rest of the storylines attached to this episode because, honestly, it really is all about Abby and Jordan. Abby's willingness to fight for her patients is nothing new. We've seen it since the character's beginning, but we've only ever gotten glimpses of the drive behind that. Her admittance of her lack of follow-through is haunting and so well played. Even if she doesn't realize that she's finally evolving beyond that behavior, she's not using the fact that she failed her boards as a reason to give up. She's moving ahead and trying again. Julianne Nicholson's truth serum recollections are also haunting and brilliant. Julianne Nicholson, that's the actress's name.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent. And a total, like, oh, hey, it's that person that when you look at her filmography, I can't quite put my finger on what I know her from. But she's very much in that, oh, hey, it's that person category. But wouldn't it be nice if this was the last story of traumatic motherhood the show would ever do? We can't have nice things, apparently. Either way, I'm sorry to see Psych Abby go. Side note, Corday trying to help Carrie is a sweet 180 from where their relationship was just a few years earlier. It just struck me now that they are both widowed single moms. And there goes another missed opportunity to draw upon. Thank you. The Elgin storyline, I'm actively disengaging with because I know how it ends. I don't. So no spoilers because I don't remember. Same with Carter and Kim, except that there is some really excellent foreshadowing in their conversation about their relationship. And as far as the foundation goes, I really just don't give a fuck. Although Carter's dad asking him if he was back on drugs is probably funnier than it should be. And I find the laboratory subplot just unsettling and dumb. Also, what kind of relationship are you in where you have to tell your boyfriend that you're not sleeping with your ex? Shake my head. The thing is, in hindsight, you can kind of see the dark clouds forming, which I think is a good thing for the story. I'm giving it an 8 out of 10 because Abby and Carrie's plot are excellent, but the rest is a little meh. I can't believe we're already circling the end of season 10. Excellent points there. And then last but certainly not least, at Carrot says, yay, good food. It's sad food, but still good food. My thoughts on this episode are organized by the character they center around, starting with Abby. It seems to me like Abby both starts to heal herself while she helps heal others. Yay. Additionally, I'm always glad to see ER address the stigma around therapy and somewhat working to normalize it. For Jordan, ER is both episodic and plot-driven, which is seen as Jordan's storyline carries over from the last episode. While the ending was slightly ambiguous, I found it to be just fine as an ending to this storyline. Neela, despite maybe not being ER material, Neela reacts as necessary to the situation she was presented with. I'm glad she's found a place she is comfortable in. Colin, I forgot to mention last episode that when I first saw Colin, I said out loud, oh, hi, Stuart, which I assume, is his character from Big Bang Theory. While Colin is different from his actor's role in Big Bang Theory, he still carries a bit of that same awkwardness, which is fun to see, in my opinion. Forgive me for this, but Kevin, your character is sus, man. They mean to say Colin there? I don't know. I have zero familiarity with Big Bang Theory, and especially it's like sub-characters, so forgive me. Carrie, firstly, wow, is that baby in that one scene fake? I didn't catch that, so I will have to go back and look for that. Secondly, no, Carrie, don't do it. Running away with the baby never ends well. The answering machine with Sandy's voice recording is sad, and the framed photo of her in the background is sad as well. And Carrie is holding Henry's baby clothes and a cup of probably now cold coffee. Can you say depressing? Please hear this in a Dora the Explorer voice. Every moment Carrie has with Henry is so sweet. The way she tries to hold on physically to Henry a little bit longer when they're in the ambulance bay is a great bit of acting by Laura Innes. What's this? Henry characterization? Henry likes to be held up to the sky? Makes sense. After all, that's where his other mama is. Ooh.
Oh.
Dark.
Rude.
Dark, Carrot. And Corday. Corday is slay. Can we get a yay for Corday? Yay.
Yay.
And finally, Daniel Day Kim, social worker Ken. He reminds me a bit of Simu Liu, who played one of the Kens in the Barbie movie. Great.
It's also Shang-Chi in probably the best Phase 4 MCU movie.
LOL, Daniel watching a Marvel movie.
Right. I watched the Barbie movie, which I know is not a Marvel movie, but that is referenced in this listener response. I watched it, and it was great. But if they put Barbie in the MCU, I will burn Utica to the ground. So,
what did Utica ever do to anyone?
Stop putting things in the MCU. Just stop it.
Well, good thing there's only one movie from it this year. That about wraps up our episode for today. Thank you all very much for listening, as always. This show is brought to you in part by our patrons over at patreon.com/thatintownpodcast, where for the low price of only $5 a month, you can get an assortment of stickers, including one featuring our favorite desk clerk, Jerry, and over 75 hours of bonus audio and video content, including the full season recap episodes, a free-form monthly bonus show called The Lounge, movie reviews, where we talk about a movie featuring an ER cast member, and character retrospectives, where we reflect on departed main cast members. We would also appreciate it if you would follow us on our social media accounts. We are on Facebook at facebook.com/sandandtonepodcast, and we are at sandandtonepodcast on Instagram. Also, be sure to check out the official Set in Tone community on Facebook. Our theme music is provided to us by Andrew M. Edwards and Daniel. Where can folks find you at?
They can find me on Instagram at dan.u, that is Y-O-U.E-L. They can also find me on my other podcast, The Popular Court, with my co-host Jake Terrell, where we do a different pop culture topic each episode and put it through a little mock trial.
And Lauren, where can folks find you at besides in bed?
No, you took it. I was going to say in my awful gremlin nest, binging either The West Wing, Survivor, or The Traitors, which season 2 just finished, guys. Go check it out. But yeah.
We finally got a TV that's streaming capable in our bedroom now. So
Lizzie set me up so I could be a gremlin in comfort. So thank you,
Lizzie. It was 15 bucks at the thrift store. So it's worth it for you. You can find me on the sinking ship formerly known as Twitter. I am at Random Gamer. That's JAM3R. And thanks again, everyone, very much for listening. Please join us again next time and have a great week.